Good day, Nick. Could I order 2 Rossinis and, a Puccini?
2 Rossinis and a Puccini, Maria.
Tosca's on tonight. Very nice. Oh. And the Barber of Seville has just been defrosted.
Okay, we'll have the Tosca. But, hold the Sopranos.
Maria, hold the Sopranos on the Tosca.
And how about the Rossinis?
I don't mind, whatever you've got. But try not to leave it in the oven too long. Last time I got Orpheus in the Underworld, it was burnt.
Of course, it's supposed to be.
Oh. And can you be careful how you pack it? The other night the box was soggy, and I spilt Rigoletto all over the front steps. Then the kids trotted all through the house. Look, I'm in a bit of a hurry here. So
sure, no problems. Maria, make it allegro!
This is ABC Takeaway Radio, and we'll be back in half an hour without Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Jill McKay, Peter Whitford, Peter Smalley, Angela Weber, Adam Bowen, Lance Curtis, Bill Conn, and Bruce Spence. Music for Dining by Arthur Greenslade and the G-Men, and Nap Horizon and the Sads. Special guests this week, David Morrow and Martin Harrison. Meanwhile, we're slightly out to lunch.
And now it's time for our weekly Pets Corner with our regular veterinary consultant, Bruce Losis. Welcome, Bruce.
Hello there. Nice to be with you again. And as usual, I'm speaking to you from my busy surgery out here in the clinic at Drainage Hills. And this week I've got a letter from Wayne Epiloptopoulos of Dumping View. G'day, Wayne. Have they still got the old sewage farm near the river out your way, I wonder? And you write, Dear Bruce, I have been reading a lot about yowies in the paper, and I have heard kids at school talk about them too. I would like to know, what is a yowie, and could I keep one as a pet? Golly, Wayne, what an interesting question. I don't think I've had a better question the whole series. Because, as it happens, my brother-in-law is an avid yowie hunter, and he belongs to a group up in the mountains where they go out most weekends looking for these creatures, and it's all very exciting. However, before I go into descriptions and so on, Wayne, I'd like to pose a problem hypothetically to you. Most yowie searchers are down-to-earth, sensible folk, but when they begin to discuss their quest in public, other people tend to regard them with scorn and contempt, etc. Are you ready to be mocked and traduced in this way, Wayne? Are you psychologically capable of withstanding the frightful degradation and vilification that will inevitably ensue when you witness to the world your faith in this wonderful creature? Your undying devotion, Wayne, involving many painful hours crawling on your knees through thick, rocky bush in the dark, carrying a 30-kilo backpack and several hundred cans of film. Can you withstand the immense, crushing loathing of all the hate-filled unbelievers who will crowd in upon you, bringing unto your house gloom, trembling and frothing at the mouth, Wayne? These are the important questions here. These are the queries with which you must probe your innermost being, your very soul, Wayne. I know. I've seen it. Now, as to your question, what is a yowie? Well, in the sober light of day, not that any yowie seeker was a drunk. Far from it. Exactly the opposite. But in the cold, hard light of reason, unfortunately, there is very little data to go on, I'm afraid. But I think we could begin with a basic measurement of between 1 and 3 meters tall, weighing somewhere between, say, 60 kilos and 200, and usually giving off an extremely powerful and unpleasant odor, rather reminiscent of rotten cabbage. As a pet, Wayne, well, since the yowie is a superior being with powers unrivaled in the known world, I think I can say a brisk and unequivocal no to that. All right, Wayne. Bless you for your letter, and now this is Bruce Losis saying goodbye till next time, and please try to remember, they that mock, yea, they shall be struck down.
We present great moments from the cutting room floor, long-lost excerpts from classic movies, and this week, the dramatic rape scene from Oklahoma.
Terrible fate. Body, lovely for you to see me.
And to end this series, we've been amazingly lucky, an exclusive interview with that fabulous, unique and flamboyant record star, by Adolf. And Adolf, I love your dress.
Guten Tag, hello.
Now, tell me, by Adolf, how are you enjoying Australia?
Well, of course, I always enjoy God's own country, even if the trains don't run on time. After all, I was born here.
You were born here, but your family surely were originally from Europe, Brian.
No, garnished. Oh. I'm as fair dinker as Farlap, as Queen's birthday weekend, as Aussie as a bandicoot on a burnt rich night.
Well, let's put it another way. You have been to Europe.
Lies! I spent the whole of World War II in Canberra.
Well, I beg your pardon, boy Adolf. I must have been misinformed. Well, let's talk about your long career. Now, I remember your first hit very well.
Genau. I had nothing to do with the massacres. I was touring in 10 shows with Tex Morton in New South Wales in the early 60s. I was too young for the war. All those one-night stands singing and playing the tuba on horseback. I never worked so hard since since Tamworth.
But it was at that time that you had your first really international break. It was 1961, and you came up with that amazing hit called after your hometown, Dubbo Twist. Well, that must bring back many happy memories, eh, boy Adolf?
Yeah, in more ways than you could possibly imagine to British or monopole capitalists.
Well, what's always impressed me is the way you've refused to compromise with these here today, gone tomorrow trends. Now, even when everybody else was copying your old mate Dennis Lilly, you still kept that distinguished toothbrush moustache.
I must admit, I have been tempted by commercial pressures in city gigs to don leotards and a blonde wig, but much as the late great Elvis was true to his gold lame, I've always remained faithful to my dear old brown shirt and black leather boots.
Which is exactly how I remember seeing you at the Willawalla Bangalang RSL Club in 1974. That was, you know, when you introduced your fabulous disco smash. And before you came on, you were telling me it was originally a Eureka Stockade marching song. I think you said it was called the Ballad of Horst O' Vessel. Well, here's a bit of it. Boy Adolf and the Guns Before Butter Club.
And sincerely, my dear, Untersturm Bahnhof Führer Park, many of us wouldn't be here today but for Horst O' Vessel, and I for one.
Yeah, but I thought you said you came from Dubbo.
Yeah, how I love that place. The beer houses, the skiing in the mountains, the view into Switzerland, the Dorf Musik. In fact, my latest single celebrates a feminist convict, a saint, a daughter of Dubbo, who was liberated by her own urge to bear sons for the Reich, for the Commonwealth.
And I know you're all going to love Boy Adolf's new chart-topping disc. Here it comes. Lily Sherlene Rapp.
Mel Brooks, Eat Your Heart Out.
And thank you, by Adolf and the Guns Before Butter Club. And now, a short break.
London, New York, Munich, Tennant Creek, wherever the international pisspots gather, Pub Air gets you there. Fly direct from Australia to the exotic Monkey and Bull Tavern in Darjeeling.
Look at you. You've been getting any. What would you like to drink?
Oh, thank you so much, David. I'll have a Ganges bitter, please. Oh, and a light ale for my cop. He's driving.
With Pub Air, you'll discover the richness of other cultures and make friends wherever you go. Fall asleep in a bar in San Francisco and wake up in a bar in Amsterdam. Or visit the Insurgents Arms in tropical El Salvador.
Viva la Revolución!
Go on, mate, give it to him. You got him where you want him now.
You know, I never used to like foreigners much, but since I've been on this Pub Air package tour, I've discovered that when people get a skinful, they're all the same under the skin. For instance, the atmosphere at the Calabar in Johannesburg was just like being at home.
Except that I had to have my Kahlua and milk in separate glasses.
Fly Pub Air with our fleet of specially converted 747s. Lounge around in our yellow tile cabins and be waited on by our friendly bouncers. All the latest in-flight brawls are available, or you can simply fall unconscious in the corner. Pub Air. You'll hardly know you're flying.
Today, we're investigating the SADs. The SADs, who are they and where are they from? First of all, I'd like to cross over to you, Brian. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the SADs.
Thanks, Gillian. Well, this is the birthplace of the Sydney SAD movement, a vandalised bus shelter on the Great Western Highway in the immensely depressing suburb of Tow Truck North. Yes, this hideous strip of dual carriageway is the golden mile of the Sydney SADs. But who are these shy, elusive people? The information is sparse. We know they like Eddie Fisher records, paper doilies and Milo. We also know that they're the group most usually interviewed in TV rating surveys. We're almost certain they don't go for aerobics, martinis, corgis or sex. So, just what are they? Who are they? And who cares? I certainly don't, and I'm buggered if I'm going to let a story get between me and the camera.
You say that you hate me.
Say that you hate me.
All of the time.
All of the time.
You say you don't need me.
Say you don't need me.
You'll never be mine.
Never be mine.
Cause I'm feeling
sad all over.
Yes, I'm
sad all over.
Baby, I'm
sad all over. So sad I'll pine.
We'll always have sorrow.
Always have sorrow.
You know that is true.
Know that.
And I'm feeling
sad all over.
Yes, I'm
sad all over.
Baby, I'm
sad all over. So sad you're mine.
What I mean, like, if I could just be so bold as to say that the SAD movement is not a movement of people who want to be sad. They are people who merely want to express themselves, sleeping in cars, through a whole variety of things, and
cheese.
Cheese is a very important sad thing.
Processed cheese. Milo.
Yeah, we do drink a lot of Milo.
And I'm feeling
sad all over.
Yes, I'm
sad all over.
Baby, I'm
sad all over. So sad you're mine.
I'm a sad. They try and take me away.
Take me away.
But you know, it's right by your side. I will stay.
I'll stay.
Our love will last now.
You see, the SADs are more solitary people.
Yeah.
They don't go for this thing altogether.
Yeah, and I collect processed cheese labels.
Paper doilies.
Paper doilies?
Yeah. Raffia table mats. Yeah, and matchbox label.
Yeah.
I've got
yeah.
a complete set of ready.
Yeah.
We sort of show them.
Yeah.
On the wall.
And it fills us with this irrepressible feeling of gloom.
Sad rule. Okay.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, on national radio, Miss Helen tells the story of her divorce.
Listen and repeat.
Lunch.
Again?
Lunch.
Good afternoon and welcome to Cape Trafalgar off the southwest coast of Spain for today's big match between the British Navy and the combined Franco-Spanish fleet. And for his comments on today's match, over to David Morrow.
Thanks, Brian. Well, it certainly is a real big atmosphere here today with 33 ships of the line from the French and Spanish fleet steamed up against the reigning champions, Britain, the current rulers of the waves. It should be a real needle contest with the Spanish eager to avenge a heavy defeat in the 16th century. On that occasion, of course, the British were inspired by a brilliant performance by Captain Drake.
But, of course, David, Drake won't be playing today.
No, but young Nelson's been doing very well lately, and I interviewed him before the game, and he reckons that he can win this one with one arm tied behind his back. or in this case, tied to the front of his jacket.
Looks like a lot at stake here today, David.
Yes, Brian, both sides are going for a place in history, and the winning team, of course, gets a crack at conquering Europe.
Also been rumours, David, in the press that Nelson's carrying an injury.
Well, he still is having trouble with his right arm ever since it was blown off at Santa Cruz. His right eye is still heavily bandaged, and there's also talk that his off-field liaison with a certain lady has affected his training. Well, he's certainly got a lot to prove out there today.
Well, the match is in full progress at the moment, and, David, the English team seems to have the upper hand.
Yes, as we watch, the French flagship has just gone down and Nelson's new tactics seem to be paying off. He's charged straight at Villeneuve's boys and it's certainly disrupted their teamwork. Well, another brilliant performance by Nelson. He's certainly squashing any rumours about his loss of form. And there he is now up on the deck. And oh dear, I think he's been shot.
Ooh, looks like a nasty one.
Yes, he's certainly gone down in a heap and that looks very serious. Well, I think he's just getting a little bit too confident now. And now I see Hardy's coming over, and he's kissed him. I think Nelson asked for that.
Well, it's a pity to see that sort of thing out there. I feel there's far too much kissing on the battlefield these days, don't you, David?
Well, well, we'll have to leave it there. But there will be edited highlights of the battle later on tonight on Wellington's Wide World of War. The win leaves Britain at the top of the Ocean Waves League with 4 wins from their last 4 outings. And don't forget to join us again next week for the game between France and Austria at Austerlitz.
Hello, this is Julian Cross, and with me in the studio this afternoon are the Electric Squirrels. Hello, Jean-Luc.
Hello, Julian.
Hello, Outre.
Hello, Julia.
And hello, Brian.
Hello.
Now, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your latest album.
No.
Randy, but that needn't bother you. Welcome to another edition of
That's Inedible,
the weekly magazine roundup compendium type fun show which looks at amazing things in this wacky old world of ours that simply cannot be eaten.
Take the Sydney Harbour Bridge, for example. Did you know that it contains 761 billion times the city's daily requirement of iron, and yet no one has had so much as a mouthful of it?
Wow! Or that Ayers Rock resembles the world's biggest meatloaf, and yet it's impossible to get between 2 slices of bread! Gosh, and that try as they might, no one has so much as sunk their teeth into the Empire State Building, although a gorilla tried to bite the end off it once.
Golly, that's incredible!
No, that's inedible!
From across the seas, around the globe, out of the outback, and into your local theatre, it's the Cooey Newsreel. California, and with the start of this year's hunting season, hundreds of Australian marksmen travel to the coniferous forests of North America for the great annual Barry Manilow hunt. The International Manilow Hunting Society arose as an offshoot from the International Liberace Awareness League, and now has a worldwide membership of over 10,000. Our Cooey plane flies low over the hilly terrain, where the Australian team, equipped with elephant guns, large plastic noses and piles of counterfeit money, carefully set decoys near hollow logs to tempt the elusive musician into the open. Fledged Australian hunters at the forefront of the fight for musical taste. Sri Lanka! And some of the nation's giant timber elephants go on parade in Colombo to the delight of these Australian visitors. The tuskers, which weigh in at a massive 4 tons each, can fling huge logs high into the air, as seen in this graphic demonstration. One of the visitors goes forward with his camera and is thrown high into the air himself. Too bad he isn't just another log, because down he comes with a bone-jarring thud. His companions run forward, but they're too late, I'm afraid, as the Jolly Jumbo treats our hapless tourists to some nimble footwork. Enormous elephants delight Australian visitors in exotic Colombo.
Tragedy struck recently on the south coast when a large school of oil rigs swam inshore and drowned in the shallows. Despite efforts by local conservationists, seen here by the Cooey camera attempting to refloat the giant animals, all the rigs perished during the night. In the morning, a sad sight greeted those who had kept vigil through the long hours of darkness. Stranded oil rigs, many sprawled full length, stretched for almost a kilometre along the sand. Scientists have been unable to explain the mass strandings, but one theory is that the world glut of oil has upset the creature's natural instinct to stay offshore. Tragedy on Australia's southern coast.
London. And in the foggy streets of the English capital, a snowy-haired figure threads his way through the overcoated crowds. It's Santa Claus on his way to a leading London store. But no, it isn't Santa. It's former public servant and connoisseur of fine food and drink, Sir John Keach, on his way to send Christmas cards and hampers of dripping to his many well-wishers back home. He waves to our camera and inadvertently knocks it to the ground. But don't worry, we've caught a glimpse of Sir John's teeth, bared in his famous grin. His sturdy back disappears into the gloom. Will Australians ever see his like again?
The Cooey Newsreel. Across the globe, out of the outback, and into your theatre.
I'm Martin Harrison. You're listening to Books and Writing. Today, a literary treasure, a newly discovered ballad by Henry Lawson, brought to light at a recent sale of antique Australian beer mats. Mr. Hovis of Gasmantle West found that 19 beer mats contained the poet's inimitable scribbling. Well, it took Mr. Hovis several months to labour these faded words into the ballad you're about to hear. From the University of Willa Walla Bangalong Press, it's got this musical setting by Lord Malcolm Williamson. The reader, Sir Horace Tuckerbox.
It was up by Flemington one night. There was really quite a sight. Gather round, folks, while I tell you all about it. Yes, lots of blokes were out on bail, chewing on their fingernails. They were waiting for their SP booking, and he's a beaut. Drinks were served, $10 a throw. Things were moving sort of slow. Everybody's nerves were getting jumpy. When all at once the room was still, men forgot about their bills, and who should enter but that SB bookie.
Looking for a spittle on the Rousers, next followed then by Black Eyed Charlie, the next one the Nobbler, followed by Slum Lord, Little Lucifer, Bing Satellite, right round the outside neck, the favourite Boundless Energy also looking for a split in the centre, followed by Diamond Ace, and Prophet of Doom is still last of all.
Everybody rolled their eyes. Sheila started heaving sighs. Someone hollered, "How much left on credit?" Everyone was running hot, and when they heard who'd won the trots, how they loved to see their SB bookie, but not for long. In the last race, luck ran out. Everyone began to shout. The bookie laughed and said, "You brainless bastards." Hunters paid up in a daze and went off swearing in a rage. Each one said he'd get that flaming bookie.
Excuse me. Michelangelo?
Go away, I'm busy.
I wouldn't interrupt you if it wasn't important.
Oh. All right, then. What is it?
Well, just a small point, really, Mr. Michelangelo.
Come on. Spit it out.
Well, David was Jewish.
Huh? Oh, right. Well, this won't take a jiff. Now clear off or you'll get some of the same.
The beehive. Nature's answer to the question, where do bees live? A bustling community of many thousands of individuals, each with his own role to play. Can we perhaps learn from these fascinating little creatures? No, of course not. Don't be stupid. Anthropomorphic drivel, of course, but that doesn't stop us from being nosy. I placed a tiny miniaturized microphone at the entrance to a busy hive. Let's listen.
Bye! Ta-ra! Don't sting anyone I wouldn't sting!
Ta-ra!
Last call for flight 83 for the gladioli patch, the lemon grove and the picnics in the park. This flight is now overdue. This flight is now overdue.
I'm sorry, sir, but I'm going to have to search you for contraband pollen.
Hey, what's the hassle, man?
I know your type, son. You visit cannabis flowers and you come back and push the pollen on the lava.
Not me, man.
All right, up against the wall. Spread them.
Oh, man.
Let's push our microphone into the honeycomb itself as we venture further into this seething metropolis.
Hi, Bert. Rusted on the honeycomb again, eh?
Yeah, well, you know what it's like.
Check yourself lucky. I've been out in the fields all day. I don't know why these bloody flowers can't manage their own sex life.
Right.
I tell you, sticking my head down an endless succession of smelly floral genitalia is not my idea of a good time.
No, just what you mean. Did you get much nectar?
Well...
It's not bad.
Oh, there's more.
And so we go deeper into the hive, which is a virtual hive of activity, into the nursery where we find the larva who'll become the next generation of worker bees.
Kitty, kitty, coo! Ah, look, he's waving his little mandibles. Say buzz.
Come on, say buzz.
But the center of the hive's activities is the queen's chamber. Let's take our microphone there now.
My drones and I would like to say how pleased and gratified we are that... What's that?
I'm not sure.
It's a microphone.
A microphone? Where? Oh, good God!
Don't panic, don't panic. Smith Henderson, put a trace on that microphone.
Yet another amazing look at the world of insects. But what do we really know about these intriguing creatures? The answer really lies...
There he is, boys! Get him! Get him!
We've been slightly out to lunch with a menu written by Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Steve Johnson, Ken Matthews, Peter Smalley, Angela Webber, Adam Bowen, Lance Curtis, Colin Bowles, David Witt, Alan Hobbs, Robert Caldwell and Rodney Wetherill. Production assistant, Linda Hughes. Script editor, Julianne Ford. Sound effects, Vince Wren and John Farkas. Technical production, Warwick Maver. Series produced by Kevin Daly and Tony Baldwin.
She could take a bit more sail in this wind, Jerry. What do you reckon? Suppose you're right. No need to push it. 3 months out of Valparaiso and we've yet to see another human being. They say isolation can affect your mind. Me too. Never felt saner in my life. Feel like another game of chess. All right, let's eat first. Fish as usual. I could cook that up if you like. Yes, yes, okay. Japanese style, yes, if you prefer. We'll be famous when all this is over. Around the world in a boat this size, eh? You can buy that sports car you're always talking about. Yes, I know you're doing it for the love of the ocean. Oh, yes, yes, good one. That's what I like about you, Jerry. You're so quick with the one-liners. Oh, no, stop. Oh, but seriously, Jerry, your being here means a lot to me. If I was on my own, I would have gone round the twist by now. You too, eh? I suppose that's because we're partners. But there is one thing. Could you stop pretending to be a seagull for a little while?
Oh, so sorry, Bernard. It's your turn to be the seal, isn't it?